Well, thank you very much, Professor Gluckman, and allow me to begin by thanking Professor Lovash and the team responsible for the forum for inviting us to attend this wonderful forum. I'd like, on behalf of all colleagues in politics, to be their shop steward this morning and say that ministers do read more than the summary. And it's absolutely not true that you have to reduce things to minutiae for us to understand it. I read everything. But I'm really intrigued by this topic on science in policy making, and particularly the role and interface between the politicians and science advisors. I want to give you two examples of use of policy in our country. Firstly, it's important for me to say we are an emerging economy, a developing country. We come out of a situation of very deep conflict. People of my color, who are the majority in our country, have not always had access to the levers of power. And thus, those who wield, in a sense, the power with respect to science are not of our mind, nor necessarily coming from a working class or poor background, from the majority in our country. So you sometimes have quite a challenge as to this individual who wishes you to accept a particular perspective. Do they understand the full context in which you as a policymaker have to make decisions? And there are times at which the range of issues beyond budget, beyond human capacity, institutional capacity, there are times at which considerations other than those associated with science have to come into play. However, I think what policymakers have to be able to do is to develop, in a sense, an intuitive ability, because you're not always familiar with all the areas of science as a politician. Not all ministers of science are former scientists. Some are in some countries. And generally, political office bearers are somewhat generalists and have to be familiar with a range of domains. So I think intuition and a sense and ability to listen, to learn, to get to know an area is very, very important. Thus, those who offer policy have to, in a sense, have the humility to understand that you're not always going to accept what is put before you. But you also must understand that at times a real opportunity can be missed if you respond arrogantly as a political leader. I had this experience when we were dealing with opportunities that exist in the field of astronomy sciences. It's a well-developed discipline in South Africa with lots of opportunities given the radio quiet environment. It's an old discipline in our system. And thus, we would have many scientists approach me to ask that we continue investment in the astronomy sciences. And others would come to me and say, well, actually, we have a lot of poverty, and you should be focusing on agriculture and food security. Why would you invest in astronomy sciences? And so we had to look at what was put before us in terms of the range of opportunities that may derive from an investment in a particular area of science. And we found, interestingly, that investing in the astronomy sciences addressed a wide range of development imperatives that my government and our country would be interested in. Investing in this area and accepting the interest of a wide range of scientists in it allowed us to address human capacity through producing more PhDs, in the astronomy sciences, in astrophysics, in mathematics, in engineering. It allowed us to create new focal areas in information communication technology, particularly in the big data space. It allowed us to attract leading academics to new chairs that we created who would then support us in expanding our PhD base. So just from one area of interest by a very senior group of scientists and our agreement to invest in it has led to a wide range of benefits, which were unexpected at the time that the issues were brought to us. But as a system, we do not have an office of chief scientific advisor as they do in the United Kingdom, New Zealand, Australia, and other countries. I tend as a minister to rely either on individual scientists within a discipline, or more particularly on the Academy of Sciences of South Africa, which is a well-established institution able to generate research in a wide range of fields through the access to a wide range of membership, and thus to give us assistance if there's a particular area in which we need a policy advice. What is really good about our National Academy of Sciences is they do not have to wait on politicians to ask them for advice in a particular area. They tend to be very astute at being aware of areas of interest that policymakers have begun to focus their attention upon. And at times, they've actually been very, I think, preemptive in terms of the research work that they carry out and the policy and body of information that they're able to offer to government. We also have a second body, the National Advisory Council on Innovation, which offers both scientific advice as well as science policy advice. It works through coordinating what we call our innovation system. It works on the basis of a range of standing committees in a range of different discipline areas, and has task teams made up of experts drawn from our universities, our other science councils, as well as the business sector. So these are established bodies that are able to do their research work very independently of government. And with the National Advisory Council on Innovation, their work has to go annually to our government. So they don't just report to me, they report to our cabinet as well. We also have a number of research institutes that provide advice to my department, but also to government, and of course, they are able to straddle not just science and technology department, but other government departments, and have expertise within them to offer a range of government departments services and research support. So our councils could shape area policy in areas such as urban development, environmental management, responses to climate change, or action on a range of public health issues. Our universities also play, I think, a very important evidence-providing role, which informs policymaking in our country. But I want to close by referring to two principles from the 10 principles of science, which are Gluckman principles on science policy. The first is, I do believe we need to distinguish science from policy, and science for policy and policy for science. I think scientific advisors shouldn't do both. I wouldn't like any advisor to be a lobbyist for a particular interest or to tell me how I should assign the science and technology budget, because I think it would be then, at that point, we'd have a situation where the advisor believes that they are now the politician. And I have seen that situation arise, where I'll be told what not to invest in by certain scientists. And of course, it will be the last time they meet with me. But there certainly is that attitude of an inability to distinguish science for policy from policy for science. The second, I think, is that one should expect to inform policy and not to make it. I expect to receive a set of options which I believe should be based on a rigorous analysis, I'm then in the best position to choose the best policy in line with our government's objectives, and of course with the assistance of those I call my primary advisors, who are the senior leadership in my department. I make sure that in my department I have very capable persons that lead in the senior levels of the department, and thus I'm able to discuss properly with them a range of options, because they come from within the science community and are well respected therein. And so when we select options, while we do have conversations with colleagues outside of government, I'm usually generally certain that we would be supported, that we're not too far off the mark. Public understanding is absolutely vital in our country, because we do have to ensure we broaden awareness of science. And I'd like to conclude by saying that at times the expectations of society can play a very direct role in influencing the design of policy. But of course, at times, the expectations of the public may differ markedly from the recommendations of available scientific evidence. Thus, it is absolutely imperative that as politicians and scientists, we really hone our ability for public engagement on science. And I think at times, we neglect this aspect of ensuring that our people understand what our particular considerations are and why a specific policy route that we choose may be of importance. So let me conclude with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister.